Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, lending support to generations of farm families for 100 years. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit Illinois offers financial products and services geared specifically to the agricultural community.
From the land of Grand Teton River City in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 22nd day of April, 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. The folks at the Andersons Everly, Iowa facility should join us closer to the bottom of the half hour to take a look at the cash grain segment. And along the way, we'll update you on the agricultural news. And then as we close out our half hour together, we'll discuss the weather forecast with Agribles Eric Snodgrass. And it all happens on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Don't forget, we're in the midst of a really quiet fundraising period. You can help us out right now to get to that $90,000 goal by calling 217-244-9455. We're going to willpledge.org and making a contribution in support of agriculture. There is a checkbox there on the website, and make sure you tell the person that answers the phone you're calling in support of Ag.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You hear the way the figures finished in Chicago for the day. Corn futures were down 12 and 3 quarters of a cent in the May contract at $3.71 and 3 quarters. July at $3.75 and a half, 14 and a quarter lower. And December at $3.81, down 12 and a half cents. The March at $3.89, 11 and a quarter lower. May soybeans down 31 and 3 quarters, $9.87. July at $9.96 and a quarter, 31 and a quarter lower. November beans at $9.83, down 15 and a half cents. January at $9.86 and a quarter, 13 and three quarters lower. Soybean oil 22 cents lower. Bean meal down $13.50. Wheat futures were off 28 and three quarters in the May. It settled 467. July, the harvest month at 474, down 29 and a half. Both of those for the soft red. The hard red July finished at 473 and a half, down 26 and a half. Live cattle futures in Chicago down $2.75 in the April at 124.42 and a half. The June at 114.45. down $2.45, and the feeder cattle in the April down $1.70 at $1.47.75. May futures at $141.95, down $3.50. Lean hogs May contract $75.30, down $1.72.5. June at $78.70, 82.5 cents lower. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Don't forget to visit our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. There you can listen to all our ag programming.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at AgriGold.com.
Let's check some of the outside markets at this hour. Futures in the energy show crude oil at $43.73 a barrel. It's up 57 cents. Ethanol futures at $1.51 and 7 cents. That's down 4 tenths of, or rather down 4 cents for the day. The wholesale price of gasoline on the RBOB at $1.53 and 4 tenths is a penny and 4 tenths higher. Heating oil or diesel fuel at $1.31 even. That's up a penny for the day. And natural gas at $2.13 and 2 tenths of a cent, up 6 and 4 tenths of a cent. The Dow Jones Industrial Average at 95.085 is up 0.511, and that's the U.S. dollar. The Dow Jones Industrial Average at 17.931 is up 32 points, and the gold futures for the day at $1,230.90 are down $18.10. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area. 20% chance of showers this afternoon, sunny otherwise, a high of 65. Tonight, partly cloudy, a low of 41. Tomorrow, sunny and a high of 70 degrees. Saturday, mostly clear and 52. Sunday, sunny and 79. Sunday night, partly cloudy and 60. Monday, here the rain comes, a 40% chance of showers, some thunderstorms after 8. Partly sunny, otherwise, and a high of 78. Monday night, a chance of showers and thunderstorms, mostly cloudy, and 55 degrees. Tuesday, more showers, and it'll be partly sunny, otherwise a high of 69. Tuesday night, a chance of showers. Wednesday, showers and thunderstorms. That through Wednesday night, and on Thursday, more showers and thunderstorms. We'll have more weather at the bottom of the half hour.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson. Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Do visit us online at willag.org. Maybe more importantly now, willpledge.org or 217-244-9455. That's 217-BIG-WILL. Make a pledge. You'll hear more about that a bit later. It's a really quiet thing at the moment, but if you do it, we won't come to you a lot in the next, several weeks. And Mike Suzalo is now on the phone line with us. He is in Atchison, Kansas, at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. Good afternoon to you, Michael.
Great to be with you, Todd. Happy Friday, sir.
Happy Friday to you, too. I suppose for farmers, though, they're thinking this is not such a happy deal because they were watching the markets really rally all week. Let's get to the cattle and feed numbers before we do the grains and the oil seeds because they just came out from USDA. What did they show?
Well, the trade was worried about the two reports, cattle on feed, as you mentioned, and cold storage as well, Todd. I think they were worried about these reports today, and that's why we saw big-time profit-taking long liquidation in both fats and feeders, even with the corn market going down. Positive news is we got good reports in the cattle sector for both. Cattle on feed April 1 was 101%, right with trade estimates. Placements in March, 105%. That was 1.4% below trade expectations. Marketings during March, 107%. That was about 1% better than trade estimates. And then over in the beef stocks, we saw a 5% reduction from February in frozen cold storage of beef, 3% lower from March of last year. And then on the weekly cattle report and total production report, we saw dressed cattle weights drop 5 pounds. So we've had some very big numbers to the downside in the cattle and feeders. I would think with grilling season right around the corner, unless we see something very negative in the outside markets for the commodities next week, I think we should find some support and some technical lows off the fats and the feeders based upon these numbers.
I gathered that it was the outside markets, in particular money flow, maybe some things that were happening in China that impacted what was happening in the grains and the oil seeds this week. They sat back. Is this just a pause in the situation, or is there more losses yet to come?
I think it's a pause, and you're talking about the grains now, I take it?
I am.
Yeah, I think this is more of a pause. I don't think the trade is satisfied with the economic healing in China yet. I think they have priced in the Federal Reserve policy shift. I think Janet Yellen signaled to the market a month ago that she wanted a weak dollar, that the Federal Reserve wanted a weak dollar, and that's why they were going to cut their interest rate back in terms of rate hikes by half and only do two this year. And that put a top in the dollar at the end of February, and almost at the exact same time we had a low in the crude oil market. So yes, I think investors saw improving emerging market fundamentals thanks to the monetary policy, thanks to some Chinese economic data. But I think the market's still very worried about it. I would say I am still very worried about both China and Brazil going forward. And the newest news out there about maybe Great Britain leaving the European Union formally, that would be something that could pose a dollar-friendly market as well. So there's a lot of uncertainty. 6 to 8 months ago, we were talking about these things. I can't say that a lot has healed up in the last 6 to 8 months. So a very, very good rally that was good to be getting some sales made upon both old crop and new crop and corn and beans this week, in my view.
Yeah, okay. So let's clarify, because I think I heard it differently than maybe you meant to say it. So I asked if there was a pause in the marketplace going up. You said yes, but you really mean this. Do you mean that, or do you mean something else? Do you think the market still has more upside potential in it, I guess, is really the question.
Yeah, and my answer would be I don't think the trade feels as though they can say this is the low in the commodity markets. And I certainly am saying that from my standpoint.
Yeah, that's what I understood you to say. And it's prefaced on the lower dollar, which would continue to make higher prices or more availability of commodities on the world market and drive higher prices. Is that That's yes. really summarizing it very shortly.
Yeah, but it also brings back that investor sentiment into the commodities. I mean, when you look at crude oil, it is about 60% off its lows. You look at steel prices, they're about 60% off their lows. Now, there is one thing out there that has to be watched, and we might have talked about this in the past, but there is this hog rebuilding situation in the hog herd in China. Last year, it's come to my knowledge from doing some research that their breeding herd was culled by about 40%. They're essentially knocking out the small producers, bringing back online large producers with the idea that we'll have bigger production facilities that will be better managed with greater efficiency of hogs and pigs per litter. This is something that could really shift the demand curve out for the meal market in the short term. Clearly, we're going to see more pork imports coming into China. I think that supports also the bean imports and also the crushing demand in China in the short term as well. So that is one of those, I think, separate line items other than what's going on in the emerging markets and the currencies. But if the Brazilian currency weakens and they become more competitive, then what China does buy is probably going to be more of Brazilian beans. So it still plays a role, but this demand of the meal is something that needs to be watched, I think.
Did I hear you say that you thought producers should take advantage of the price hike in the marketplace, though, still at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I would do it after today's close, right. But on the move up this week, I was recommending that, especially for the 2015. And this gets us to the, you know, heart and soul of what we talked about this past winter at several of your events, and that is getting the product, getting the corn and beans out of the farmer's hands in the bin and getting it into the marketplace. That lays the groundwork for a better rally potential if we see either the weather market come around or we see these emerging markets do a lot better than I think they are right now.
What else do we have to talk about today?
I think probably the biggest thing, other than what we talked about, is the Mercantile Exchange played a role in this market this week. Last night, they raised speculative margins on beans. This morning at mid-session, they raised hedge margins on meal and beans, and there's a pretty strong correlation by raising those bean margins by 17% and meal margins 21%. I thought there was a pretty strong correlation between that and the new lows that came. So we need to be watching what the CME does as well in the mix of all these things.
Yeah, so they finished blowing everybody else out. Is that because of the margin call increases? Is that roughly what you're telling me?
I can't say that because of compliance.
I don't have to comply, dude.
That's right. 985 November beans and 385 December corn is something we probably want to get back as far as support as well once we come into the planning numbers on Monday, which I think the planning numbers could be quite big for corn come Monday based upon what I'm hearing out in the country.
All right. Going forward, what do producers need to watch?
Probably the meal market would be number one. Right alongside that, the economic news coming out of Brazil and China. And we do have a Federal Reserve policy meeting next week as well. So those are the three top things in my list, Todd.
Okay. And then speaking of Brazil, Brazil and Argentina, what are you hearing from them about harvest and or the Safrinha corn crop?
Yeah, Argentina, they should have been about 40% done this week, which is normal. They were only 10 to 20% based upon intelligence I could gather. The couple private estimates that came out yesterday in Argentine bean production came around 56, 57 million tons. I think the trade had already dialed in a 55 number from a Wall Street Journal article on Monday, Tuesday, so not a number on Thursday that would feed the bull. As far as the Brazilian second crop corn, what I'm picking up is that there are some rains coming as early as late next week. But if we miss those, then we probably will have some significant yield losses.
And how is planting going in your area?
Missouri guys are probably about done. Western Missouri. Kansas guys are really starting to get more into it here. Now, out west of me, they're about done as well. So I would say, like the Illinois guys, you're getting very close to finishing corn planting at this point.
Did the Missouri guys go straight into soybean planting?
Yes, they did. Yes, they did.
We'll see that too then. All right. Hey, thanks so much. We'll talk with you again next week.
Nice to be with you, Todd. Have a good weekend.
You too, man. That, of course, is Mike Zuzulo. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Joins us on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. Don't forget to stay with us if you can for Commodity Week. It's in the second half hour here. Or if not, you can listen to it online. It's already there at WILLAG.org. Really good program we have. Have Arlen Suderman from FC Stone with us, along with Dr. Michael Cordonier from Soybean and Corn Advisor, and we talk a lot about Argentina and Brazil with him. And then Bill Mayer is with us and Brian Stark, so you want to be sure to listen up for that one. While you're at willag.org, go to the top of the page, hit that donate button, 217-244-9455 or willpledge.org. And thanks so much for doing that in advance. In today's agricultural news, attacks on GMO foods have not stopped in Congress. Some congressional Democrats insist there may be something wrong with genetically modified foods. This despite decades of research and declarations by the Food and Drug Administration that GM foods are safe. The issue cropped up again this week in the House Appropriations Committee, where top panel Democrat Nita Lowey of New York proposed shifting $3 million in biotech educational outreach funding to other uses.
It's not the responsibility of the FDA to mount a government-controlled propaganda campaign to convince the American public that genetically engineered foods are safe, particularly when the science is far from certain.
Alabama Republican and Agricultural Appropriations Chairman Robert Adderholt responded with the opposition to the amendment.
We rise to oppose the amendment. The FDA and the USDA have clearly stated that crops, food, and animal feed derived from biotechnology are perfectly safe and healthy. The federal government has reviewed these products and allowed biotech products to enter the marketplace since back in the 1990s. Scientists and federal government acknowledge there is no food safety concern with these products, and the FDA has maintained this position for decades.
Adderholt stresses that there is bipartisan support for GMOs, citing North Dakota Democrat Heidi Heitkamp's pressing of federal officials at a Senate Agriculture Committee hearing last year to do more to educate the public on the safety of GMO foods. He cited the need to avoid consumer confusion and says the FDA and USDA need to ensure the public has science-based information. The committee defeated the anti-GMO amendment to the fiscal year 2017 agriculture spending bill 20-29. Let's stay in Washington, D.C. The U.S. Senate failed to pass a measure that would block the Clean Water Act rule, otherwise known as the Waters of the U.S. Rule, or WOTUS. Senators voted 56-42, failing to reach the required 60 votes to attach the amendment to the fiscal 2017 funding bill for the Army Corps of Engineers. North Dakota Republican Senator John Hoeven originally planned to attach the amendment to the EPA funding bill. However, the White House had threatened to veto the bill if passed. Meanwhile, the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals declined to grant a rehearing on its decision regarding whether the court dispute over WOTUS should be deliberated. The involved parties asked the court to send the matter to district courts, but the appeals court declined. The same court issued a nationwide stay on the rule last year, indicating the states involved in one lawsuit were likely to win their case. And finally today, a regional grocery chain is launching a 100% local program for Angus beef at its 38 stores. Indiana-based Marsh Supermarkets announced a partnership with 8 farms that will supply the beef to grocery stores in Ohio and Indiana. A 100% local decal will identify for customers the origin of the beef. A Marsh Supermarket spokesperson says they are launching the program because consumers increasingly want to know where their food comes from. The grocery chain says the meat is also minimally processed, which means free of all additives, including preservatives, dry rubs, marinades, or other flavor enhancements. The chain is partnering with 8 local farms to supply the meat. The program complements Marsh's signature premium Angus beef program, which features cuts of beef that carry a USDA certification for tenderness. Marsh is one of just 4 supermarket companies in the nation that offers the USDA-certified tender cuts of beef. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Please do visit our website, willag.org. At the top of the page, you'll find a little bitty button that says Donate, or you can go to willpledge.org or just dial 217-244-9455. We're in the midst of a really quiet pledge period, hoping to raise $90,000 by next Wednesday. Not quite there. Got a ways to go, in fact, and need your help right now today. Willpledge.org, 217-244-9455. Do it right now. And we won't come to you with that great big pledge drive a bit later. So now is better than later. Now, up next on that subject, it looks like more rain is coming to the Corn Belt, and that'll concern farmers hoping to plant this year's crop now rather than later. However, we actually have some time, says University of Illinois Extension agronomist Emerson Nafziger.
There's not huge losses of yield as long as you can get corn planted by the second week of May or so.
The fact is, Nafziger would rather wait than put a crop in the ground under not-so-great soil conditions.
I think it's easy at this time of year to do more harm than good by planting it when you say, well, if you look out there and say, well, this soil isn't quite ready, but I think we'll have to get started and go. And our goal is to get it planted when it's fit and as soon as we can when it's fit. And so we should all keep that in mind.
Nafziger's planting date studies across the state of Illinois over the last 9 years put the optimum planting date for corn at April 17th. Planting dates from April 5 to April 25 maximize corn yield within a 2-bushel range. Corn planted April 30th loses 2 bushels off the top, and a delay to the 10th of May puts the expected loss at 8 bushels to the acre. I was just looking through that planting date study. He did soybeans as well. The average maximum yield for soybeans over the 23 site years of the study, and those were gathered from 2010 to 2015, and they were the same for corn and soybeans, that is, the site study sites, is 67 bushels to the acre for soybeans. There is a 2.5-bushel decline from April 10th to April 30th. 4 bushels by May the 10th, 7 bushels for a delay to the 20th of May, and 11 bushels to the end of the month, 14 by the 10th of June. And if you don't plant until the 20th of June for soybeans, you lose 19 bushels off that 67-bushel maximum yield. And that starts on the 10th of April. If you take a look at the curve and go online to the bulletin, you'll find that curve actually begins about April the 10th. And for soybeans, it declines all the way through. Unlike soybeans, or unlike the corn curve, which starts early in the month of April and maximizes out, I think, on the 17th day and then begins to turn back lower. Interestingly, Nafziger about soybeans says the usual halfway point for planting in the state of Illinois is the 20th of the month. That is, he says, only because of the wet conditions that keep farmers out of the field. Given all of this, the Ovi agronomist also says he wouldn't wait for planting corn after planting corn to start planting soybeans, that he would just go ahead and keep on planting just to switch crops from corn to soybeans without delay, as long as soil conditions were really good. Once you get wet, here's another interesting tidbit. He says that if your next field would be corn and it was too wet, but you had a soybean field that was ready to go and conditions were dry, he'd actually switch and plant soybeans. I know that's far more difficult to think about, but that's what Emerson Nafziger has said. You can read all of that online there at bulletin.ipm.illinois.edu. Now, coming up in just about, 2 minutes or so, we'll talk about the agricultural weather forecast. That with Agribull's Eric Snodgrass right here on the Closing Market Report. It is the 22nd day of April. Then following that, on many of these radio stations, you'll be able to listen to Commodity Week. So stay with us right here on IPM.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support of the Friends of WILL and Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
It's National Jelly Bean Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1763, Jared Elliott died. Elliott was an American colonial clergyman and agronomist who wrote essays upon field husbandry. a tome about reducing inefficiency and waste in colonial farming methods. He also invented a drill which would open a furrow, plant seed, and drop manure in a single operation. In 1778, James Hargreaves died. He was the English inventor of the spinning jenny, the first practical application of multiple spinning of raw cotton by a machine. In 1832, Julius Sterling Morton was born. He was the founder of Arbor Day, first observed in Nebraska on April 10, 1872. In 1889, the U.S. opened Oklahoma to homesteaders, and the Oklahoma land rush officially began at 12 o'clock noon. In 1913, Thomas Wright of New Jersey patented a method to load ice onto refrigerator railroad cars. In 1945, Robert Elmer Horton died. Horton was an American hydraulic engineer whose studies on rainfall drainage established the basis for the analysis of soil erosion and soil conservation. 1 month before he died, Horton published a 95-page landmark paper that summarized 2 decades of study on rainfall drainage. And in 1970, the first Earth Day was celebrated, and that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. We're in the midst of a really quiet pledge drive, but it is a pledge drive nonetheless. 217-244-9455, willpledge.org, 217-244-9455, trying to raise 90 grand by next Wednesday, the 26th. Really need your help right now, so 244-9455 or willpledge.org. And make sure you tell them you're pledging in support of ag. If you're online, there's a checkbox there. So check that out. If we get it all raised, that's about $90,000, and we're a bit more than halfway there. We won't bother you anymore. Hey, thanks so much for doing that. Now, Eric Snodgrass is with us. He's from Agrible to take a look at the weather forecast. Lots to talk about. Let's begin with the rains from last week on the plains.
Yeah, so big soaker in the plains last week, which is going to have an impact on the wheat crop that's there. Really, Texas was the target. Texas, at the end of the week, had a system move through that dropped in some locations better than 15 inches of rain. Mostly hit a place that's pretty highly populated, so this isn't going to have a huge impact on ag like it could have. But you know, Texas has been targeted since late last year with many of these big rain events, bringing a few months worth of rain in a short amount of time. And so that's, you know, that's been interesting. That stuff finally moved our way, you know. So we actually had about 8 days here in central Illinois where we had dry conditions, warm conditions, great to get into the fields, a lot of field work done, a lot of early planting done. And then we got some beneficial rains, I think, for that effort on Wednesday. And then some storms moved through on Thursday. So this is all the same system. That stuff that started in Texas finally moving its way, you know, toward us. The big system kind of curled up and got us. And so some strong storms kind of around here. Saw some hail nearby. Certainly here in Champaign, we saw some pea-sized hail with one of the storms that came through. You know, not doing a lot of damage to the crops, of course, because we're kind of pre that time period. But still, interesting kind of week of weather that we had last week.
How about next week? What's it look like? Farmers would like to stay in the field.
Yeah, that's certain. So today, you know, Friday is clearing up. It's warming up. It's a beautiful day. You know, Saturday, we're going up into the 70s. And then on Sunday, we might be approaching 80. But I'll be honest, beyond that, that's where things really start to get interesting. So we're looking at the next system that's coming through. And basically what's happened is the jet stream's gotten a pretty favorable pattern such that it's able to pump some moisture up into the Great Plains. And when that situation sets up, we have the risk for some severe weather across the Great Plains that will then translate to the east and move toward the east, toward the Midwest. So while you're going to get a great Saturday and Sunday, we got to be watching out for Monday. Really Monday night into Tuesday and Wednesday as a risk for some more thunderstorms moving through our area, you know, potentially bringing quite a bit of precipitation. At the same time, the northern plains, let's think like northern Wisconsin, northern Michigan, northern, you know, Minnesota, so that area really more than the northern plains, they're going to have some temperatures that are going to kind of get toward freezing which as warm as it's been, that's kind of rare. You know, this is vacation land. This isn't really heavy ag land, so it's something to think about. I'll tell you, when I look out just a little bit longer, just trying to give that perspective, I see us getting through the end of April and into, you know, early May, you know, near average to above average temperatures for most of the Corn Belt. And I certainly see this continuation of kind of wetter than average conditions across the Great Plains and part of the Midwest. So we kind of just take a step back and look at, you know, growing season for 2016. Crop stress right now has been really held down south, you know, really in what's going on in Texas and in the lower Mississippi River Valley and the Delta with excess of precipitation. But honestly, I think we're going to be a good start to the growing season in the Midwest and in parts of the Great Plains.